I don't know about you, but for me, dealing with one reality is complicated enough. Right? Just life is complicated. Then you've got to add into it virtual reality and maybe even augmented reality. But then there's a new kid on the block called mixed reality, and I just have a little bit too much of reality, Colin Cullis.
It's true, Bruce. There's just too much reality for our own good. But we are I am fascinated generally about the next big things, even though the next big thing is usually normally described that way after the fact. We don't really know what the next big thing is. We tend to look back and say, yeah, that was the next big thing back then. But we tend to focus on what we don't know rather than what we do. The old hype cycle allows us to do that. And here I am doing my bit for the hype cycle for this new mixed reality and the company called Magic Leap.
Mm-hmm.
So a reminder about how amazing things could happen is if you remember the first mobile phone, well, that was basically a brick with no coverage and a worse battery. The first PCs needed actual computer programmers. And an early form of a website was pretty much just an electronic document. They were never seen as genius for where they started. It's where they led us that actually allowed us to say, wow, this is amazing. And for virtual reality, that was sort of kicked off with the buzz around Oculus. This is this Kickstarter project that Facebook bought before it even shipped. Mm-hmm. Google Glass was launched with skydivers and cheering crowds and an amazing sort of reception for it. Microsoft's HoloLens, that was a little more sedate as they rolled it out. But nevertheless, a lot of people were looking forward to what this thing could do. And while people were receptive to the idea, they were very critical of the actual product. The things were bulky, they were big, they were expensive, they still are, and very often they just didn't work, which is where we find ourselves now. And so all the clamor of people still wanting to try and work in this sort of field, and there are a lot of them, a lot is happening in the background. And one in particular is this sort of company that's not in Silicon Valley, it's in Florida. It doesn't make a whole lot of crazy claims. There are some pretty impressive ones that it has put out. So generally it's quiet. And usually when we hear about it, it's because another large company has invested a huge amount of money into it. Google, Alibaba, Axel Springer, Saudi Arabia was the most recent one, $400 million invested in this company. And it has yet to provide a product. It has said in December it will be releasing its first product this year, which is why I'm kind of saying, okay, I'll talk about it because it was launched or it was created in 2010. And the thing is, what are they looking to build? And here maybe I'm going to give you a bit of a funny sort of thing. Are they looking to build an industry-changing product or a product-changing industry?
Whoa. An industry-changing product or a product-changing industry?
Because we always just assume it's a product. Everybody's building products.
Yeah.
Sometimes it isn't. Let me explain the difference. So a mobile phone, we mentioned that one earlier. That was a product that transformed the telecommunications industry. Landlines became out of vogue. The mobile phone ruled. But when you think about computer-generated graphics, CGI, they allowed for a new type of movie, and it's transformed the industry. The most profitable blockbusters all feature a lot of CGI effects. Many of them are old comic books. Those old comic book stories couldn't have been, you know, put on the big screen back in the day. But because of CGI, you could create those movies. They were believable. We went and paid big bucks to go and see them. That's how the industry changed as a result of the product rather than the product changing the industry. GoPro kind of almost tried to do this. And when we touched on this one, it was sort of, would they do it? Wouldn't they do it? So they started with these great cameras. People started capturing lots of awesome video. The competitors came along with similar cameras. They started converting, say, let's create a community of you know, video makers. And they did do that, except they didn't turn it into something that would sustain them as a business. So the jury's out as to whether or not they're going to just limp along through or disappear and be bought by somebody else. But that was a classic case of they managed to change the way we do things. They just weren't able to make a business for themselves while doing it. And Magic Leap is kind of in that same boat. They've currently got a well-funded promise because they think they've got the kind of tech that has moved us forward. And maybe it's worthwhile just mentioning what the difference with these techs are as you
please, because me. I mean, okay, reality I can picture. I'm sitting here, you're there. This is reality as far as I know. And so this is the reality I can cope with. And virtual reality is where I get fancy specs and then I fall over my own feet as I watch a video on my phone, for example. The rest of it is beyond me.
Yeah, so virtual reality pretty much says replace everything you see with a new, you know, new image, a new overlay, and whole new reality altogether as you move your head. Things that you couldn't see come into view. You know, you literally replace everything with this virtual reality. And the fancier ones now, you can move backwards and forwards rather than just sort of moving your head around. And they add sound that follows you around as well. Quite impressive. Augmented reality wanted to put things that weren't real into the real world. And they generally did that by sort of having a screen display in front of you and then projecting a reflection onto that screen, which then overlaid. It was kind of opaque, and that sort of did it.
Is that a Pokemon Go thing?
Yes, inserting
things into the real world. Right.
Okay. Right on the money. And generally, like Pokemon Go, you know, your little blobby thing sort of stays there when you walk around.
Oh, sorry. My little blobby thing. You meant
your Pokemon.
The Pokemon.
Yes, right. Your Pokemon. It stays generally in that one space, even though the background moves. Even though the background moves. And the fancier versions of that allow you to actually walk around. So you would see the little Pokemon, you'd be able to walk around them, you'd be able to walk up to them, you'd be able to walk away from them. They get bigger and smaller as you're moving that. And the mixed reality combines the stuff that is static with the stuff that moves. That will either move across your screen as you're looking at a fixed point, or they will be fixed in a place because you put them there. And the thing with Magic Leap, and I'm going to leave out the hardcore tech stuff, because they use a thing called light field methods. Again, something that was postulated and devised many, many years ago, but the technology didn't exist to be able to provide the processing power to make that look believable enough for us to want to use. And of the demos, and I'll post one or two of them online, they certainly do appear to be quite impressive. And so I'll run through some of the potential places they can use it, and hopefully that gives you an idea as to, you know, if it's going to be kind of useful. So the first one would be that they've done is an agreement with the NBA, the Basketball Association in America. And these days, when you watch sport, there are so many overlays about how far a kick has been or how many meters somebody's run and everything else. So basically, there's hardly any space left on the screen. In fact, I'd go so far as to say, if you go and watch live sport these days, it's almost disappointing because, hey, there's nothing in front of me except a bunch of players running around kicking balls and things.
So dull. Yeah.
It is. Now, what they're saying is, well, rather than sticking all those overlays on your TV screen, you can stick them all over the room around it. And if you wanted to see the latest running stats for how many points this guy scored, or you want to see a replay of a piece of action, you simply just call up another screen with a replay, zoom in. You can do all sorts of crazy stuff like that. I have no idea what they're actually going to do right now. It's all very like, oh, we've got an agreement, we'll see what happens. But the promise is that they could do all of those things, and that would be very helpful for sport. You probably have, most people in companies will see this one colleague, and he's got like a bank of computers. They're surrounded by screens, and they look very impressive. How they focus on all those screens at once, I don't know, but, you know, that's their setup. Well, this effectively allow all of us to have that, because you just create all of these virtual screens, and each of them will have different stuff displayed. And as you turn your head, you'll look at the different ones and use and interact them. The other plus about that is, of course, only you are seeing those screens. So people who normally or maybe have to be put in sort of a pretty private area so that nobody can see what's on those screens, they can sit anywhere. In fact, if you want to be one of these office workers, you know, working from restaurants and things like that, well, effectively you can do your stuff wherever you want, and nobody has a clue what you're doing. And here, a particular value might be sort of security workers. You imagine somebody not looking at their phone while stamping passports, for example, could have some screen information up in front of them and see, while looking at you, seeing if there's any sort of outdated things for you, or running comparative pictures to see if you were maybe on a wanted list somewhere. They can do stuff like that. So that's kind of very useful real world things for this kind of technology. But they've also made an agreement, a collaboration. I'm not quite sure how serious it gets, but with a comic book publisher called Madefire. And here the notion is, if comic books have been so profitable for movie makers, and there are a lot more comics coming out new, and there are even more old comics, that you can't turn all of them into movies, but you can make those comics a lot more immersive. And so for a younger generation that's maybe thinking, well, paging a static image drawn onto a page is not that exciting for them anymore, this could be a way to make all of them become a lot more fun. In the movie industry, huge amounts over there. We tend to watch, as I say, a very impressive final product. The poor actors are wandering around looking at a bunch of green screens and funny props with little white balls on them. Using these same screens, the actors may be able to immerse themselves into what the final product looks like, and so give us a better performance. Or the cameras, rather than having to do that all in post-production, might be able to shoot the live action with the generated effects all in one place. And because the Lucasfilm collaboration and Weta Works, or Lucasfilms in this case, is owned by Disney, Disney makes a fair bit of money from its theme parks. And theme parks are expensive. You've got to build everything, and everybody only experiences that one particular ride. Imagine you walk into a room, and this week it's configured, when you put on these little goggles with a couple of props, into an Alice in Wonderland. You can come back tomorrow, you can come back in an hour, and it's configured for something completely different. You could have the same people wandering through the same building, and they can choose their own experience because of what they will see as they wander through their house of horrors, the fantastic zoo, the, you know, what it's running under the sea. You can just pretty much drop in whatever you want. And with a couple of props usefully placed just to give you the feeling of reality, you got to win. Or six people on a roller coaster, each of them seeing something different while experiencing the same movement. Those sorts of things, again, you know, that's a good money spinner for somebody not having to think about having to make only one. And the person at the middle of all of this, because most of these companies have a person like that, is a guy called Ronnie Ubwitz. And maybe he's the right guy for it. He's a biochemical engineer who made his money from his previous company building a robotic sort of hand device thing that assists surgeons with operations, and sold it for over $1 billion. So he founded this in 2010 with enough cash that he could take his time. And it is. It's 8 years later, and he's now saying, we're ready for our first product. But he's got a love of art, and it's this mix of the technology and the art and the creativity that I think he's trying to embrace that seemingly is going to give it a go. Well, I certainly would say so, because his bet includes having four different office spaces, one in New Zealand, and over 1,000 staff. No product, remember. That's the size of this company. It is absolutely crazy what they've gone for. However, as I think can be expected, there are quite a few critics, some of which going so far as to say, this is all a sham. This guy's taking money, and it's not the first unicorn we've seen who's lost their horns because they just promised something they couldn't deliver. But they believe that this is something that simply won't materialize. I'm not sure that his necessarily will change the world, but I'm pretty sure that his will help us change the world, along with the Google Glass and the Microsoft HoloLens and the Oculus. I think they're all going to be pretty good. And here's the three kind of scenarios that they might fit. The high road, the best case scenario. They replace our phones and all of the devices. Speech and vision is all we need for full immersion. So never mind getting rid of a keyboard, get rid of the phone. It's all gone. A middle of the road, premium entertainment, professional settings, construction, you know, overlays for building plans, manufacturing, helping you watch tools, which things must I pick up, security, as I mentioned, or art, you know, artists putting on displays, etc. And you'd see it that way. And then the niche version, if it doesn't come to anything, well, these are high-end helmet displays for sort of fighter pilots and astronauts or something like that. And then here's the most dystopian version I think I could come up with, that it would simply be a controller for people. Because despite all the advances in robotics, for performance and cost, the human body is still the best thing. So if you imagine a gig economy where manual workers basically arrive at a job, plop on this little helmet, and it starts showing them what they need to do that day or that hour for this particular job, then simply you're getting free free access to fancy hands and bodies to do stuff for you, which in the end, I suppose, will prove to us that it was our bodies that were the superior design, not our brains.
Oh, in your case, Colin Cullis with Business Unusual this evening.